ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, January 25th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we wrap up this week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two segments left to go for this week. The first is the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. We're chat about Super Bowl 53, what we're seeing in terms of sharp action, and also talk about this from a risk management standpoint with 2 weeks worth of betting prior to the game. After that segment, we'll be joined by Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our second Handicapping the Hardwood segment for this week. We're chat about the Big West Conference as we look at another low major here, and then look ahead to this weekend on the hardwood. We got some good games coming up, including Iowa State versus Ole Miss in the SEC Big 12 Challenge and Michigan State versus Purdue, with Sparty off of a big win last night over Iowa. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there. You want to make sure you're checking out everything that we have to offer, including Kyle Hunter's daily college basketball picks piece. We're going to be doing some more stuff with the Super Bowl, obviously, here over the next 7 or 8 days. We'll have a bunch of prop betting options. We'll have some best bets, betting trends, all that type of stuff for the big game. But we'll keep going with our regular NBA and college basketball content. NHL, of course, on the All-Star break. So Parker Michaels getting a well-deserved respite from the day-to-day grind of the NHL season. But he'll be back here coming up, I believe, on Monday or over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you head on over to our Bang the Book YouTube page. Check out what we have to offer over there as well. My Thursday 3-pack finally cracking through, getting one of those 3-0 nights. So I'll have another video up there for you today. And Kyle Hunter will have another video up there for you today as well, taking a look at this weekend's college basketball card. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 200, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, up to $500, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino, up to $500. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Three different sports books over there at DSI now, three different sets of odds. So you can shop around right there in-house for the best Super Bowl prices. And obviously, you want to make sure that you have as many outs as possible for the prop bets, the game line, the money lines, all that type of stuff. So we're going to start with the odds report here. This was recorded last night with Brent. So hopefully the sound quality is okay putting this into the show. Obviously, as you know, we post the full shows over at bangthebook.com, but I also post edited segments. Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, they get the edited and cut down segments. So if this doesn't play back as well here, I apologize for that, but we'll be posting the individual segment for both this segment and also Kyle Hunter's college basketball segment today. So you can always keep an eye out for those at bangthebook.com and at various places to listen to Bang the Book Radio. So with that, this is this week's version of the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Talked about Super Bowl 53, sharp action we've seen so far, risk management for props, and also when we expect another wave of money to come in on the big game. So here is this week's version of the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent, the head risk manager at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the odds report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Doing awesome. Our handle's really good on the Super Bowl. Looks like the numbers kind of settled down in terms of the spread and total. So we're sitting in a good spot, just kind of waiting to see where this thing goes. It's, you know, got a lot of interesting action we'll talk about today.
Yeah, we definitely do. And we'll talk about a lot of things with side, total, and money line here for the Super Bowl. Then we'll do some general prop stuff, talk about a couple that are out there. Obviously, we'll have a prop segment, or at least some sharp action for the props on next week's show. But Brent, what's going on with the game right now? What kind of spread are we looking at? What kind of total are we looking at?
Right now, I'm sitting, and again, it's pretty much market-wide, I think, is 2.5 out there, which is where I am as well. Like the earliest opener of this number, I believe, had the Rams favored -1.5. So that was obviously out of whack. You know, we talked last week, and I said, you know, kind of the good thing heading into this Super Bowl is that no matter which of the four teams, you know, the two teams advanced from the four teams last week, this line was going to be, I said it was probably going to open between somewhere between 1 and 2. Looks like, you know, the biggest place has opened up right away at the Rams -1.5, and it's obviously flip-flopped to New England -2.5. But I felt kind of comfortable that we're going to be kind of like somewhere below 3 or might have to hit 3 eventually. But it was going to be one of those numbers that in terms of risk management was probably going to be, you know, easy to work with in terms of me just my idea thinking that the opener was going to be somewhere between 1 and 2 total as well. Opened 57.5, 58, and it's kind of hovering right around there still. So it's you know, the number obviously is ticked up on the side, and did a flip-flop. We didn't get terribly, you know, burnt on that. So, we're in a good spot, and it's really settled at the 2.5 mark.
Now, there have been some brick-and-mortars out in Vegas that have gone to 3. I think a couple of offshores have gone to 3 and then have come back down to 2.5 for the most part. Have you touched 3 at all, and do you envision going to 3 anytime soon?
No, I haven't yet. I mean, no, right off the bat, I will let your listeners know that we did take sharp money on this game, and it was on the Patriots at even money, +100. So basically, like the money line they grabbed right away, not on the spread. Since that time, I have been pretty fortunate in terms of balancing most of my action at -2 and -2.5. But still, it just, you know, this is one of the games where it's just really kind of running away in terms of the count, getting being on the Patriots. We always talk about our bet counts on this game, on these games, the actual individual number of bets that have been placed. Right now, I'm at on the spread, I've got 85% of my bets on the Patriots. So that's just a massive, massive count for a Super Bowl. Very, very one-sided. I think if you look back to last year, for example, the Eagles and Patriots was around 52% favoring the Eagles. I think that was. The year before that was around 60%. That was the Patriots and Falcons. So we needed, the Falcons quite big there as well. So that was around 60%. Just to give kind of an indication of how really, really way out of whack this number is. So 85% of my bet count is on New England. And talking money, I'm about 89% of my actual dollar volume on the Patriots as well. So I think this is pretty much industry-wide that the numbers, you know, really getting out of hand this early on the Patriots. So, I think this number is, it has ticked up to 3, I know. I have seen some -3, -05 numbers out there as well. And I think, if you ask me where this number is going, I think here, personally, I'm probably going to hit 3. I'll probably start with 3, dog 15, and see what happens. I believe in Vegas there were some reports that they hit 3 and got sharp money on the +3 on the Rams right away. So I think this number, where it is now, it's not going to do anything other than, get beat around, I think, between 2.5 and 3. The sharp money, like I said, just a massive, massive one-sided count on New England. Like I said, 85% of the bet count, 89% of my money. So industry-wide, I think it's, in between 80 and 85% in terms of the number of tickets bet on New England. So to get anything back, it looks like we're going to have to go to 3. And again, I'm just kind of, feeling things out right now. Since I went to 2.5, it's, seen kind of trickles of buyback on the Rams, but not enough to, to hold me back from going to 3. And again, I think my first move, if and when I do that, will be 3, dog 15.
Well, and as you look at this game, and you mentioned, out in Vegas, a couple of those books went to 3, got hit with sharp money right away. Seems like you kind of have that expectation as well, where if you go to 3, you're probably going to get that sharp money at that point. So knowing that, I mean, are you as a sports book taking a position saying, I'm okay with public money loading up on the Patriots because based on what sharp minds seem to be thinking, the Rams are the right side here. So are you willing to take a little bit of a position and maybe be a little bit exposed?
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, too, that the sharp money that I did take earlier on the Patriots at even money, that was a guy, again, it's very important that you kind of have a profile of your customers, obviously your sharp customers in particular. But the person who played that, the account that bet that, not the person, not that I know them personally, but the account that bet that game at even money is a guy who typically does buy back the other side. So I get the feeling that the sharp money out there just kind of, I'm not going to say sharks circling the waters waiting for that 3, but I think, this particular person, as soon as I get up to a juicy enough number, it may be, +125 or something like that, where he takes money back. But this is, a type of person who typically does buy back the other way, whether he does it on the money line to lock in a profit or to play the +3, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure I'll probably get buyback on that early sharp money that I took.
Well, and again, there are probably a lot of listeners going, okay, well, if you're 85-15 on ticket count, 89-11 on money, why wouldn't you just go to 3? And that's the reason why. I mean, because we've got, we still have well over a week until this game is played, And if you know that when you hit three, sharp action is coming, there's really not a whole lot of incentive to go there yet.
Yeah, it is, you know, very early, as you mentioned. And again, you just, like I said, it's just kind of a feeling you get that sharp money is kind of waiting out there to see what happens at three and see who goes to three. You know, some of the, you know, more public books, I guess you want to call it, who have gone to three are the type of books where they really limit their sharp action and don't take much back the other way. So they can get away with going to, you know, three and having their squares lay the three. Whereas, you know, us in the store, we're probably going to big bet back the other way if and when I do that. So I'm just kind of just waiting to see how it goes. You know, like I said, the bulk of my money did come at -2 and 2.5 so far on New England. So if I do get buyback at the +3, you know, we're really not in a bad spot. So that's why when I talked about last week about thinking this number, you know, opening up, you know, somewhere between 1 and 2 was going to be decent for us in that we probably weren't going to have anything risk in terms of being, you know, a number that goes to 2.5 and close to 3.5 or anything like that.
Well, and this is also a game too here where anybody interested in a Rams teaser, not really a plus EV play because the total is so high here that, you know, this is a higher variance type of game. So a teaser not going to be as effective in this type of matchup. So Brent, let's talk about the total for this game here. As you mentioned, 58, 57 and a half, somewhere in there, down to 56 and a half or 57. Is that a result of sharp action?
No, just, you know, I think the number kind of is going to start ticking back up as well. Surprisingly, I guess I've actually got a higher wager count towards the under, which you kind of don't expect with these two teams there. But the count on the total is almost split 50-50. It's actually 53% of my ticket count is on the under, 47% on the over. So I've actually got more bets on the under. It wasn't sharp money, but kind of just surprising. There is mostly 57s out there. I just get a feeling this number is going to tick back to 57.5. I will say, though, that we did take sharp money on the first half of this game on the total. That sharp money came on the under. That was under 28.5. So, again, I know some other places open up higher on this game. I think there were some 29s initially as well when this number was like 58.5. So, fortunately, I don't have any risk at the 28.5. And, you know, for the first half, too, I don't, you know, put a handicapper hat on very often, but you just, you know, you look at what New England did last week in terms of what their game plan is. You know, they're very good out of the gate. They start quick, but they do attack on the ground. They like to hold the ball, and that they kind of like set the pace that way. Last week, the first half went way under. We had sharp money that we talked about last week on the game that was over, and of course the first half went under, and the game went way over. So sharp money did come in under 28.5 in store. Again, like, there were some higher numbers out there. And I'm seeing, like, right now, I have seen some 27.5 now, which is a really dramatic move from, like, say, like 29 or 28.5 down to 27.5. When you go through that 28, I think at 28, you pretty much lose any value going on at the under if you're sitting at under 28 minus 120 like we are right here. So, you know, I just sort of want to – I'd rather sit on 28 instead of having the risk of landing 28 and paying the guys you know bet under 28.5 and then going 27.5 and have everyone jump on the over 27.5. So right now I'm just kind of sitting to where the market goes. There are some 27.5s out there. I'm 28 under -120, and the sharp money, like I said, came under 28.5.
And keep in mind for our listeners here, Patriots in their previous 8 Super Bowls with Belichick and Brady have scored 3 first quarter points. 3. And it happened last year against Philadelphia. So they do have problems out of the gate in the first quarter. And as I say that, they'll probably be up 14-0 after the first quarter. But keep that in mind that, you know, they have struggled coming out of the gate. So, Brent, let's talk a little bit about what we expect to see here going forward. As you mentioned, you think 3 probably the way that we're going to go for the spread. Total may inch back up a little bit. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that limits will increase next week. So where are you sitting now for limits, and then how does that timeline sort of progress as we get closer to kickoff?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we go higher limits than any other game. That, you know, a couple of days leading up to the Super Bowl before that Sunday, we'll have basically, we'll take real high limits, almost like whatever you've got in your account, basically you can fire, kind of that kind of ordeal. So we'll go very high, you know, about 3 days leading up to the game, probably. We'll go, you know, not quite half those, you know, the unlimited, basically. So we'll go big limits the week of the Super Bowl, and we're still right now. We're not quite overnight limits right now. We're higher than that. We've doubled our overnight limits right now. But again, the week of the game is when they really start to open up, and that's generally when you see some of the sharper money come in. And of course, day of the game is guys, you know, if the numbers, you know, keeps ticking up and guys have been waiting, they'll fire big then. But you know, we talked about where this number is in terms of the 2.5. I think, you know, we've seen, you know, it's kind of the defense mechanism that we have, in that we have lower limits before, and this is basically why. I mean, you take a shot on the Rams, or sorry, on the Patriots at even money, and now you're looking at someone who wants to grab back on New England. So you've kind of, that's the defense mechanism we have in terms of going with lower limits, and you see this is a great example of how that plays out. So when we go to the week of the game, you can open those up. And again, you know, people who, if we hit three, then someone might say, okay, you know, I don't think this number is going to hang around till 2 or 3 days before the game. So they fire right away, and that gets you back down to, say, a 2.5.
All right. So let's talk about the money line here, because I think the money line is always really interesting for the Super Bowl. As a general rule, you'll see a lot of people that, you know, will want to take the points with the dog, play the favorite money line, because the favorite money line, usually a depressed price from what it would usually be relative to the spread. But here, with a spread of 2.5, kind of takes some of that money line maneuvering out of the equation a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this number, generally speaking, what we've seen in the playoffs is that the higher your comeback on the plus is, the more action you get on the dogs. We saw that, you know, especially with the, you know, when there was the conference finals and the division, you know, championship games, all that kind of stuff going on with wild card stuff. We saw, like, big action. We had real, like, serious liability on the dogs in all those games when you're getting like plus 200 to plus 240 and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, the action kind of is mitigated here in terms of where we're sitting are right now. Minus 140 we are, with a comeback of plus 120. And really the action on the money line is, it has been, you know, slightly one-sided towards New England. I'm looking at about 60% of my wager count being on New England, but that's not a bad spot. That's easily manageable for us. Like we said, the spread count is really the one that's dramatic for us.
All right, so let's talk about props. And, you know, I'm sure that this can be a very difficult time of the year for you, trying to balance risk on all of the props that are out there, you know, keeping an eye on everything that's going on, along with, you know, obviously worrying about the side and total and money line for this game. So let's sort of talk about that process of managing risk, because, you know, a lot of prop bets are going to be posted tonight and tomorrow, you know, especially some of the individual player props if they're not up already. So let's take Tom Brady passing yards, for example. Let's say that the numbers, just to make it easy, 300. You know, so what do you do if you get action? I mean, are you moving that number to 302 yards, 305 yards, or are you looking to move the juice around on that over 300?
Yeah, when you start out, obviously, I mean, first off, like, when we post a number on most of these player props, we do try and leave stuff in half. So, you know, a line like 300, unless they just by you know, some act of God, Brady throws for exactly 300 yards. Again, we're just talking hypothetically here. So, you know, you write the action and all that stuff on that number, and then you end up pushing, giving all the money back. So it's kind of like a waste for both the player and from our side in terms of the work involved. So we usually try and open up numbers just as, you know, just something worth mentioning. We try to open a number on the half point. So you're looking at 300.5 yards, or a receiver is going to be like, you know, 89.5 receiving yards, what have you. We always try to work with halves off the bat and kind of move increments of one off that. So from 300.5, if we had to move the number, we'd go like the 301.5 or down to 299.5. Again, if you're assuming we open the number at minus 110, definitely use your juice first. I mean, going from 110, you just 5 cent increments as well. You know, we don't have massive limits on props, so those also are actually going to be like lower limits leading up to the game, and the day of the game will open up for probably double what we have during the week. So you generally don't want to get too high a juice on these prop numbers, especially if you're open up minus 110 each way. So once you get to like minus 120, minus 125 max, you know, because if you're taking money one side at minus 110, and then all of a sudden you've got to go up to minus 130 and you get money back the other way, well, you're paying plus 110 and you're taking minus 110 and you're just basically, you know, taking money out of one pocket and throwing it out the other pocket. So from there, generally you don't go below, you know, above, say, minus 120, minus 125 on stuff like that. We try and move the number, break the number as much as possible. The higher numbers, obviously, like 300, you're going like a full point at a time. If you're counting like the number of receptions, that kind of stuff, you do have to move in half points. You don't want to set up middle. So if your receiver sitting there, say, you know, over 4.5 receptions, you don't want to go straight to 5.5, so you do have to go to 5 and break that number in half point increments. But the bigger the number is, the more likely we are to move by like a yard at a time or even more.
Now, obviously, as we talked about, you've got some right now, and this should balance out, but right now you've got some side exposure with New England. You know, 85% of the bets on New England. Does that creep into the prop betting market at all for you to where, you know, maybe you kind of juice those New England props a little bit higher? Or, you know, how does that work? Do you do anything in correlation with the spread or the total or the money line?
No, generally speaking, you don't. But that being stated, it's almost, you know, a given that whoever, you know, the MVP of the Super Bowl is going to come from the winning team of the Super Bowl. So you do kind of, you know, talk to your prop department and say, look, you know, we're very one-sided in terms of our wager count, in terms of who's going to win the Super Bowl and the spread. So, you're most likely going to get more action on the winning team, that being the way that the public thinks is going to go in terms of the Patriots right now, if we're talking today. You know, so we probably, you know, we shade our price on the Patriot players a little bit. Yeah, most likely. And again, it's just because in all likelihood, your Super Bowl winning MVP is going to come from the winning team.
And, of course, for our listeners out there, keep in mind that the last non-quarterback offensive player to win the MVP, Santonio Holmes, Super Bowl 43. In the meantime, you had Von Miller and Malcolm Smith, a couple of defensive players. Otherwise, it's been all quarterbacks. So keep that in mind as you look at the MVP prop market. But, Brent, how do you come up with these numbers for MVP? You know, I mean, everyone kind of has different numbers for Tom Brady, different numbers for Jared Goff, stuff like that. There is a formula, a method to this madness.
Yeah, well, you're right off that. It is absolute madness here with playoff props that are the Super Bowl props. It is crazy. Generally speaking, I guess it's kind of everyone knows this, obviously, that your quarterbacks obviously garner the most action, the most attention, so that's why their prices are a bit lower. And you're basically going off key positions from there. I mean, you're talking your running backs for both teams and wide receivers for both teams. I guess Gronkowski would be the exception in terms of the tight ends. He's kind of a high-profile guy. But, you know, you've got your running backs. And, again, I mean, Gurley is obviously the big guy for the Rams, although C.D. Anderson has got, a lot of carries the last few weeks. But in Patriots, you're looking at Michelle. You're looking at White, who catches the ball well out of the outfield or backfield. And then you're talking about, obviously, your big-name receivers and stuff like that, guys who are going to have big, big games. And then your prices on your defensive guys, obviously, are going to be quite, quite high. In terms of, how we work with, basically we just have, a calculator basically setting in terms of, what we want to hold in terms of our profit percentage on these props. And you just kind of juggle the numbers around until you get the right hold percentage. I mean, generally, Super Bowl props, we do keep a lower hold percentage than we would in the regular season just because our volume is just so much greater.
Now, is this a thing where, somebody comes in on Tom Brady and, you can find Tom Brady out there, all over the place, but DSI will say, you find Tom Brady -120. Somebody hits that, maybe you go to what, -140? Do you adjust all the other prices then, in concert with that?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't move it that much on Brady, for example, just because you're looking at what your risk is at the time. So let's say the Brady's even money for sake of argument, and you take, a nickel bet on Brady. So your risk on Brady is now 500. Now, if you go to someone like White, for example, whose odds are 2,500, and you take a $500 bet on him, your risk is suddenly 1,250. So you're 12,500. So you're talking about a $12,000 difference on a nickel bet between the two players. So you really have to. What we really look at is the payout and what our risk is. When a guy bets a nickel on Tom Brady, even money, your risk is the nickel, which is not that big of a deal. If he bets a nickel on someone like James White at 25-1 or Gronkowski at 50-1, then all of a sudden you've got a decision to make in terms of what you move. Generally speaking, yeah, I mean we play around more in terms of upping the prices on the lower odds initially. Your risk in terms of the Super Bowl MVP and stuff like that, usually on the high prices, guys, people like to take a big shot on some of these numbers. Your sharp guys, just as a general rule, talking about what I've seen from Super Bowl props, is your sharp guys will generally find value in prices like that, whereas the public will want to, have some fun and put a number down on, say, James White at 25-1 or Gurley at, +1,600, whatever it is. They're looking for the bigger payoff, a bigger bang for their buck, whereas the sharp guys will find value in these numbers. They also find you know, it's the, again, it's such a public-driven market, especially with the props. But even the game itself is very much driven by the public. So, you know, we talked last year. I think the same situation came up where sharps were finding value in numbers that were like minus 300 and minus 400 and stuff like that. And it was just the fact that if you're a public bettor and you're looking at these props, you know, do you really want to risk a minus 350 or minus 400 to get, you know, a 100 back in return? Not really. You're looking for the, you know, the big bang for your buck. And also you get a little bit of bragging rights. I played that at plus 250. I played that at plus 350 or whatever. So if the sharp guys, I mean, if they see something where, you know, we've got a price out there, it's like, say, minus 300, which is like a 75% probability or break-even point, and they think the number should be like minus 500, they're going to hit that number. They're going to, you know, they're going to find value there. Where as the public this time of year, when we have, you know, our full slate of props out, they're almost always taking back the plus money.
Yeah, it's something I'll always remember. One of my friends in the industry told me about the Super Bowl. He goes, "You want more minuses than pluses in the Super Bowl prop market." He said, "You know, it's just the way you want it to be, because you know those big ticket plus money prices. I mean, they're that high and that, you know, attractive for a reason." So, Brent, I guess you know, just in general here, I mean, when would you expect another wave of action to come in on this game? I mean, are we talking Monday, Tuesday? Are we talking, you know, once all the props get posted, you know, then maybe people kind of come around to looking at the spread as well? You know, just when do you think we see an additional wave of movement here?
Well, I mean, there's no real injuries to be, you know, worried about right now. So I think, you know, right, looking at ahead to the game itself, I think probably early next week is where you'll see a wave. You also have to understand that mostly, you know, the public guys, they have to manage their bankroll. We're not talking about sharp guys who have, you know, a whole ton of bullets in their gun at this point in time and can fire away and still have a lot to play with basketball and hockey. I mean, we're in the all-star break with hockey, but with college basketball and stuff like that. So it does come down to a question of money management as well in terms of managing your bankroll. So I think as you get closer to the game, that's why we see, you know, so much more action come up. People just don't want to bet like 10 days in advance unless they really think the number's going to move and find some value. So I think the next wave will probably be, you know, around Thursday, Friday next week. It's kind of like the hype is all going to kick in.
Well, ironically enough, we will talk to Brent again, record with him on Thursday night for our Friday show next week for our final odds report of the season. Brent, good luck with everything here over the next couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Awesome. Thanks again for having me on, Adam.
There you go. There's Brent from DSI Sportsbook, the head risk manager, talking about some of the challenges with 2 weeks prior to the Super Bowl and also some of the sharp action that we've seen there so far. So, again, hopefully that played back okay. If it didn't, again, you can get the edited segments with some audio edits, a little bit of a volume change, stuff like that, on any of the podcast sites that we're on and also over at bangthebook.com on our podcast page. We got one more guest, one more segment left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is Handicapping the Hardwood with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going all right, man. It's a, you know, Friday, busy day here. Everybody else always says, you know, hey, it's Friday. It's the last day of the week. You know, Friday is just another day to me. You know, Friday night's a busier night, and Saturday is a busier day for me than most of them, especially in college basketball season.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the only way that I know what day it is based on which guests are on the show. I mean, every other day, they just run together when you work in this business, and you know, you really don't get a day off. And if you take a day off, and you and I were talking about this a little bit, you know, while that segment was finishing up, you know, this week you've had some medical appointments to take your son to. You've kind of been out of the loop a little bit. And, you know, even for as long as you've been doing this business, you were telling me that, you know, missing a day is it's hard to come back from.
It is, you know, you miss, essentially miss 2 days or at least two, the majority of the days, with his appointments. And, first of all, I want to say thanks to everybody who's, you know, reached out to me as far as how he's doing. Right. I mean, right now he's not doing that bad. It seems like he has, you know, some pretty bad asthma issues, and we'll try to work through those and hopefully everything works out okay. But, you know, at least we have a plan to try to help things going forward. But, you know, as a dad, that's certainly stressful when things have not been going great with my son who's that young. And that adds stress just to life in general. And then being away for 2 days and it being such a busy time as far as college hoops, you know, I've said this on the show before, I spend a lot of time on college basketball. There are so many teams I feel like I know these teams pretty well, you know, I mean, all these teams well. And with there being more games lined this year, it's made even more work, to be honest with you. You know, you got to know the teams, you know, the Kennesaw States, the Liberties, the teams like that. But in the past, it didn't really matter if I didn't know that much about a team like that, because their games were never lined anyway. So a very busy time of the year for me when it's college basketball time. And, you know, like I've said before, I love this time of the year as far as college basketball. Between it and college football, it's hard for me to say what's my favorite sport, but they're definitely my favorite sports. But definitely a very busy time, and I feel like you're playing catch up and then going into the weekend knowing how huge that Saturday card is as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, I mean, you know, you miss with college football or the NFL, I mean, it's once a week, you know, but if you're a little bit tied up on a weekend, something like that, you know, in the NFL, maybe you have 16 box scores to go back through. In college football, maybe it's 50 or 60. In college basketball, I think there were 150 games last Saturday. So, you know, the time it takes to catch up on everything, you know, go back through, see if teams, you know, played differently because of an injury or any of those different types of angles, it is very time-consuming. It is something that takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, when you're pulled away from that, you know, for especially the reasons that you were, you know, it does make it extremely difficult to get back into that mindset and catch up with everything. But, you know, I know that you will do that. Unfortunately, today on Friday, not a very in-depth college basketball card. But, you know, we're going to continue with our conference-by-conference breakdowns here, and we're going to go out to the Big West. So before we talk about some trends and angles and kind of organize these teams, overall, what are your impressions of this conference this year?
Well, the Big West is always a weak conference. I mean, you know, when you think of the Big West and when they get into NCAA tournament, I mean, they're always going to be a really low seed or high seed, however you want to say, you know, 15 seed, a 14 seed, 16 seed, depending on who gets in there. But, you know, they're not going to be a team that I would think would have much of a chance to win a game in the NCAA tournament. This is a sloppy conference, you know. A lot of the teams are close together. You know, there's not too many really bad travel spots here in this conference, but you know, this is a conference where there's a lot of sloppy basketball played. You know, there's a lot of turnovers. You know, you could say, well, it looks like the defenses are good because their efficiency on offense is not very good. But if you watch the games, you realize that most of the teams, it's not really that the defense is that good. It's just that, you know, they throw the ball away a lot, and it's hard to, you know, have a really high turnover percentage and still be very efficient on offense. So, I mean, you do certainly get some good defenses in this conference. And kind of like I said about the Big Sky, it's the rare teams that play really good defense in a conference like this that are almost always the teams that win the league.
All right, so as we look at some angles and some trends, some really profitable long-term stuff here, and, you know, as you mentioned, this is one of the conferences where you've had the most success in the long run. What are some of those trends and angles, you know, specifically in terms of looking at teams that are on the road?
Yeah, a couple right off the top is underdogs are 51.3% ATS since 2005. Since 2010, 52.9% on underdogs. Certainly not a huge angle there or anything, but it's something, you know, it's still there, and there's an edge toward the underdogs, and I think that makes sense based on, you know, a lot of these games are pretty close. Like I said, you know, they're not terribly high scoring because both teams are usually pretty sloppy. And, you know, these teams aren't separated by that much other than the teams right at the top, at least this year. And I think there's a little bit bigger difference in the Big West this year than there normally is. The second one, which I think is really impressive, is road teams. Road teams 542 and 459, it's 54.1% ATS. I mean, you're talking a big sample size there, and that's since 2005. So road teams have done really well in this conference. I think that makes sense. I don't think there's great home court advantages here. You don't have any place that I can really think of here where you say, man, this is a raucous environment. It's so much different than everywhere else. I mean, Hawaii is the one that's different than everybody else just because it's such a long road trip. And obviously Hawaii has a harder time when they travel as well because they're playing almost all their games at home for a long time, and they go finally in the conference season and have to play some road games. But, you know, the road teams have done extremely well here, and I wanted to point out one specific angle, which I like this one quite a bit. It's road teams on the first game of their road trip against home teams that are coming off a road game, meaning it's their first game at home, are hitting 58% since 2010. 58% ATS when it's your first road game and the other team's in their first home game of this stretch. I think that's a pretty impressive angle, and I think that's one that makes quite a bit of sense to me here. You know, the teams on a long road trip, you know, say you've played three or four games in a row on the road, haven't done as well, but teams on that first game of a road trip have done really well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting trend. I mean, why do you think that is? Is it, you know, because of the nature of the travel here where, you know, you're doing a lot of travel within the state of California? I mean, Hawaii, the only team not in California. So maybe there are some bus trips. Maybe it's not a conference where you're doing a ton of flying. Do you feel like maybe that's the reason why?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are. I think that these teams take buses a decent amount of time. I don't think they have much of a budget here. But I think that, you know, it's an extension of the angle before it in that the road teams are 54.1% ATS since 2005. So usually the first game of a road trip, a team's going to do better than they are later in a road trip. And this is across all sports. I mean, you look at, you know, teams in college football that have played four straight road games, they haven't done very well later in this in their road trip. The same is true in college basketball. It's just a little bit more here in the Big West than most of the other conferences. And I think, you know, you get a team going on a road trip, and in the first game, they're very focused. You know, this is a key road trip for us. And you know, they haven't had to fight any kind of real adversity yet. They come into that game, you know, just ready to go. And you get the home team that could be, you know, a little bit lackadaisical. It's their first home game back from a couple road games. You know, hey, we're at home. This is going to come more easily. It's easy to have that letdown spot in that first home game. So I think that between the fact that road teams have done well and that, I think that adds some sense here.
Well, another one that you mentioned here that, you know, road teams that struggled, particularly those that struggled a little bit in the non-conference, I would assume, based on how this trend sets up, you know, road teams that have had some issues against the number away from home do wind up playing pretty well in this conference.
Yeah, and this is a really good angle. I mean, road teams with a road cover percentage of 50% or lower for the year, 57.2% ATS in the Big West conference play since 2005. And again, if you tighten this one up and make it since 2010, it's almost 60%. So these trends have all been fairly strong. If you go back all the way to 2005, they've been even stronger here in recent years. And I don't really know why it would be even stronger now than it was then. You know, that could just be noise as far as the numbers there. But I do think that, you know, it makes a lot of sense that a team that hasn't really been that good on the road for the season overall. So maybe these teams from the Big West, like you said, go out on the road and play a team from the Pac-10 or the Mountain West or something like that, and they're just getting drummed on because they're just not nearly as good as a team like that. And then you come into the Big West, and people are looking at it and seeing, look how bad they did in the road game. I mean, you know, this team's no good. And then they're catching 7 points when they should have been catching four or five. And they're covering at a pretty consistent rate here in conference play because, like I said, there are a lot of close games in the Big West conference play. If you go back and look, there are also a lot of close spreads, so you're not going to be seeing very many where, you know, a team in the Big West is catching 12 or 13 points. It's just almost never going to happen because these teams are too close together.
Well, and before we rank these teams a little bit, one more trend to talk about it, and this has to do a lot with the inefficiency that you mentioned on offense.
Yeah, the under's 5.8 or 73 since 2005. That's 52.3%. That's been pretty steady as I look through the years here. A lot of sloppy basketball, like I said before. You know, you get these teams that, you know, like a UC Irvine does a really good job uglying up the game. They're really not very good on offense, but they play really hard defense. They are very physical. They're a quality team. I mean, I think they're well coached. Hawaii's been able to do stuff like that in recent years with their new coach there. I think that, you know, it's just a mark of the league being what it is, you know, a league where there's a lot of teams in the middle of the pack that it's hard to separate, you know, numbers 4, 5, and 6 from each other, but they all are fairly similar in what they do and what their shortcomings are as well.
All right, so let's sort of look at the hierarchy of the teams out here in the Big West Conference. And this is a little bit like the Sun Belt that we talked about, I believe, last week. I don't think it was on Monday's show. Could have been Monday's show. Like I said, all the days run together. But this is one where you've kind of got a top dog. And then a lot of times the teams below them are sort of interchangeable from year to year or maybe go in streaks.
Yeah, and to me, UC Irvine's been a top dog here for a little bit. You know, we remember a few years ago when Irvine had NJI in the middle of the floor and they were just dominating the Big West in general. Then they're not really a dominant team now. You know, I wouldn't say they're way better than everybody else in this league, but, you know, they're the team to beat. UC Irvine, 54th in the country, according to KenPom, in defensive efficiency, 14th in effective field goal percentage defense. They don't give you anything close to the rim. They're only giving up 41.8% on two-point shots. So if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to make some threes. And there's not very many teams in this league that are really that good at making threes. So I think that plays to their strength, and I think that Russell Turner knew that that's, you know, that's the type of league that this is. So if you're going to beat them to get hot from deep, and obviously some teams will do that, but it's not going to be very consistently. To me, I think number two teams are just, I put them on the same line here. UCSB and Fullerton, and I know Fullerton just absolutely drummed them last night, 81-60. I will say Fullerton's a team that we talked about a couple shows ago. Like I said, to be totally honest with you, the days are kind of running together for me, so I can't remember which day we talked about this, but I remember talking about Fullerton being a good buy-low team, and they've won three straight now. This Fullerton team is much better than they looked with their record, and I think they'll continue to be better. Probably can still get some value on Fullerton here for at least a couple more games because – you know, their overall cover percentage for the season is still not very good. At least I don't believe it is. But UCSB, also a good team. I like UCSB's coach and Pasternak. Very efficient on offense compared to most teams in the Big West. So here's one of the rare teams that doesn't turn the ball over very much and is a pretty good shooting team as well. And then after that, to me, you go from Irvine, UCSB, and Fullerton tied, and I think it's a pretty big drop-off to the rest. I have Long Beach State next. Long Beach State always schedules a really good schedule. I mean, I don't think they played as tough of a schedule this year some years, but they're still 32nd toughest schedule in non-conference play. So they certainly, you know, scheduled up pretty well. Arizona State, Mississippi State, USC, Oregon State. Yeah, I mean, they certainly test themselves. So, you know, when they get into conference play, that helps them quite a bit, you know, because they're playing teams that are a lot worse than what they played in the non-conference slate. I have UC Davis next, partially because UC Davis is one of those teams that can play defense in this league. And like I said, if you can play defense in this league, you're always going to have a chance because most teams here are just sloppy. They're not very good at defense. They're you know, fouling a lot, things like that. You can definitely get some really floppy basketball in the Big West. Like I said, you know, it's certainly a conference that I've done very well in on the long term. And I think it's because, you know, I kind of know that this conference is what it is. You know, I mean, it's different than quite a few of the other mid-majors. Almost every year, the Big West looks to be about the same conference as it was the year before. I think the only difference right now is that there's a little bit more of a difference between the top three teams and the rest of the league. Hawaii, I have right after that. Hawaii's done pretty well here so far this year, 11-7. You know, I think that they have a good coach in Gano, the former assistant at St. Mary's. I'm impressed with the job he's done there. They catch people in some bad spots in their home games. They just lost in overtime to UC Irvine the other night, a game that Hawaii certainly could have won. We'll see how they bounce back from that. They have three straight home games here coming up against Davis, Long Beach, and UC Santa Barbara. All three teams that are pretty competitive here in this league. So I'm curious to see how Hawaii bounces back from their tough loss against Irvine. And then the final three, I have Cal State Northridge. You know, a big-name coach there, Cal State Northridge now, that's been at a lot bigger programs than he is right now. I'm curious to see how Mark Gottfried does there. You know, so far his team is first in offense efficiency, but they're very poor on defense. So we'll see if they can get better on defense moving forward. The last couple for me, UC Riverside. This is a team that's been at the bottom of the league or very close to the bottom of the league for a long time now. And then Cal Poly. Cal Poly, a few years ago, if you remember, they made it into the Big Dance, kind of a stunner that they made it there. But, man, they have been playing some bad basketball this year, 4-13. They just lost by 23 points on Wednesday night at home to UC Riverside. So, rough year for the Mustangs.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you look at UC Santa Barbara, really bad shooting performance from two-point land in that game against Cal State Fullerton. So maybe UC Santa Barbara, a bounce back team here this weekend, kind of playing against that outlier. But you know, you mentioned UC Irvine being the top dog here. And we talked about this with regards to both the Big Sky and the Sun Belt. It's kind of tough to get back to playing basketball after you play that top team. And there is a trend with UC Irvine, well, I guess with UC Irvine's opponents, that is something that people want to pay attention to.
Yeah, teams are 25-38 ACS in their last 63 after playing UC Irvine in their last game. This makes a lot of sense to me. UC Irvine, much more physical than most teams in this league. You know, they're committing quite a few fouls just because they're so aggressive on defense. They've consistently been the team to beat in this league now for a few years. And I didn't go any farther back with this angle because, you know, if you go back 10 years ago, UC Irvine was not good. So, to me, it doesn't matter, you know, what they did 10 years ago. UC Irvine last year has been a very good team. So 25-38 ATS, the team that just played UC Irvine in their next game. So if you are looking in the Big West to back a team, I would be a little bit hesitant if that team just played UC Irvine last game.
All right, so let's look at some regression candidates here. And we'll look at the Summit League, by the way, on Monday's edition of Bang the Book Radio as we keep going through our conference-by-conference breakdowns. Only 8 teams, I believe, in that league, so that one won't take us too much time. But we get into the regression candidates here. Let's start with a negative regression candidate. And, in fact, this is a team that has already dropped 7 in a row, and you expect things to get worse.
Yeah, Fordham's defense, I think this is specifically – a look where defensively Fordham looks like they're a pretty good team. They're 110th in effective field goal percentage defense, according to KenPom, 115th, according to Bart Torvik. And I know that Adam has given, has referenced Bart Torvik in some of the videos over on YouTube for Bang the Book. And I have to tell you, you know, I think that Bart Torvik's work is pretty great as well. You know, everybody knows about KenPom. Torvik has a great website as well with some of the trends. You can look and see how a team's doing compared to what they were earlier in the season. That can be really helpful for things such as effective field goal percentage defense, things such as tempo. I think that's another good site to check out if you're doing your research. But, you know, there's no way that Fordham's going to finish as high as 110th in effective field goal percentage defense. They've played the 353rd toughest slate of offenses this year. Well, how many teams are there in the country? There's 353. So this team plays very slowly, but I'd be really careful taking low unders with this Fordham team. All of their numbers are going to be low because they play slowly. They've had some pretty low-scoring games so far this year. If anything, I'd be looking to, take some overs, especially if they're really low numbers here coming up, because Fordham is going to start playing some better offenses than what they've played so far. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that Fordham's about to play, you know, Duke and you know, teams like that, Gonzaga, teams that are just excellent on offense. But, you know, they've played the weakest slate of offenses of anybody in the country so far this year. So when you have upcoming games against Dayton, Dayton is definitely good at offense. You got games against Davidson, Richmond's another good offense. You know, you're going to have some higher scoring games than what you've had earlier. So I want to see what kind of totals they put out there. And also, you know, don't be afraid to lay some points against Fordham in a game where the opposition is pretty good at offense and they're going to push the pace because, you know, Fordham is going to lose some games pretty badly. They're really weak on offense and they're not nearly as good on defense as what it looks like they are.
One of the things I really love about Torvik's site is when you go to the specific team pages, you can put a lot of qualifiers in there, you know, against top 50, top 100 teams, against conference teams, stuff like that. Fordham for the season here, adjusted defensive efficiency over at BartTorvik.com, 104.2. That's 196th in the country. When you select just conference games, their adjusted defensive efficiency drops to 111.4, which would be among the worst in the country. So Fordham's defense is regressing here. This is a train you want to jump on pretty soon, I think, because there's a chance that the odds makers and you know other bettors do catch up to this. But one thing about Fordham, they're 41st in the country, 44.5% of their field goal attempts coming from three-point range. So Kyle mentioned playing overs with them. If they run into a team that's not good at defending the perimeter, that could be one of those higher scoring games.
Yeah, I think that's a great point also that they're shooting that many threes. I knew it was a very high percentage. I didn't know it was that high. If they're playing a team that is very good at defending behind the three-point line, then they need to be more nervous about taking it over just because, you know, Fordham might not get much themselves. But, yeah, certainly I think the Fordham defense is already regressing and it's going to regress even further.
Well, we're going to mention UTSA twice here on the remaining minutes of handicapping the hardwood. They are our positive regression team, and then we'll talk about them from a game standpoint here in a couple of minutes. What specifically are you looking at?
Sorry, I couldn't hear anything for a little while there. It must have cut out on me. I wasn't sure if I was even still connected. Anyways, UTSA, I apologize for putting them on here twice. I will say that when UTSA, when I was looking at regression candidates, I put them here because I think that they're a really good regression candidate as far as their offense. But then when I started looking at games I wanted to talk about, when I saw their game here for Saturday, I had to include it because it's such a really good spot. But UTSA playing the 63rd toughest slate of defenses so far this year, look at what their effective field goal percentage offense is. And I don't have what it is on Bart Forvick right in front of me right now. It is 300th on KenPom, or at least it was last night. I know that UTSA just absolutely thumped Charlotte last night, which fortunately was a play in the Daily Free Pick article at bangthebook.com. We call that a shameless plug, but UTSA helped everybody out there last night. But to me, UTSA, a team that's better on offense than what they look like, you know, they play very quickly. They haven't been very efficient so far this year. They really only play two good defenses the rest of the year. So I'm saying this is a long-term look. The two real good defenses they play are the next two teams that they play in the conference here in Conference USA. So a lot of questionable defenses after that, and I think UTSA's offense will improve.
UTSA, 47% effective field goal percentage overall, 299th in the country, according to Torvik. In conference, though, 50.8% effective field goal percentage. So they are getting better here, as you mentioned. And, you know, again, I mean, this is the thing you want to look for here in the sports betting market is this is an investment market. You want to look for these buy points. You want to look to buy low and sell high. And with UTSA, you know, maybe this is starting to pick up a little bit of steam, but I still think there's value to get into the market on them now.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that this is one where, you know, they're not a very big name team. You know, we've talked about before that we really like talking about teams that aren't going to get the publicity. I really think that's what separates, you know, Bang the Book and this show from a lot of others that you're going to hear. I mean, everybody else is going to break down the Duke game, the North Carolina game. Not very many people are talking about UTSA and the trends about them. And, you know, we're talking Big West here today, or we just talked Big West. You're not going to hear about the Big West hardly anywhere. So I think that UTSA is going to be a good look going forward for some higher scoring games. And, you know, I think they could be a good back ATS as well.
Yeah, that's a game last night played at 63 possessions. They scored 88 points. But, you know, one last point on UTSA here. Over their last five games, 31 three-point attempts against Rice, only 19 against North Texas, which was a very strong win for them, 37 against Middle Tennessee State on January 17th, 41 against UAB on the 19th, and then 30 last night against Charlotte. They were 12 for 30. They're chucking a ton of threes right now. You think that's something that will continue for them?
Yeah, I'm surprised they're shooting that many threes, to be totally honest with you. I think that's increased quite a bit from what they were in the past. So, you know, I don't know if there's a real reason for why they've decided to do that so much more. I mean, if you look on the year, they've shot quite a few. Last year, I know they shot a lot of threes. I thought they had backed off a little bit this year, but they've kind of gone back that way here lately. So I'm not really sure, you know, if there's a reason for that or not. But obviously, you know, they've played some pretty good basketball here of late. So maybe they think that's one of their strengths.
All right, so let's get into some games here for this weekend. Again, as I mentioned, we'll talk about the Summit League coming up here on Monday. So you want to make sure that you tune in for that. Let's go to the SEC versus Big 12 Challenge. Iowa State and Ole Miss, one of the first games of the day. Looks like one of the best games of the day.
Yeah, and the first thing I want to say is that there are a decent amount of these non-conference games late in the year here. These have been good to the over in the past. So keep that in mind if you're betting totals here on Saturday's slate. You know, I think that the market is going to know this. So I'm trying to say this so that people know where the line's going to move, as well as knowing that, you know, if the line's getting bet up, that's probably the reason for it. You know, a lot of these non-conference games late in the season, the big difference that you see is the teams play faster. You know, they're just a little bit more free. Hey, this isn't one of the teams that we're used to playing against. Let's have a little bit of fun. Let's get up and down the court a little bit. Definitely our higher scoring games. The odds makers are going to adjust to some degree. You know, is it going to be enough? You know, I think we'll see money coming on the over in most of these games. So if you like the over, you probably want to play it early. Iowa State and Mississippi, to me, this is a really interesting spot for a game as well. That Iowa State just went to Kansas and lost 80-76. Now, that was the beginning of this week, so that helps them at least somewhat, but that was a really crazy game because Iowa State was ahead by 8 points there in the second half, went just ice cold for a while, allowed Kansas to take the lead back, and then had a couple stops late to make it really close again. They lost 80-76. If you look at who Iowa State plays after this, they play West Virginia, Texas, Oklahoma. I mean, there's really no nights off in the Big 12. We've talked about that before. So this game likely means less to them than their other games in the Big 12. Mississippi, they've been a really good team so far this year. They're coming off a 74-53 loss to Alabama last game. Just terrible on offense in that game, 0.83 points per possession. 16 turnovers in that game were really killer. I think this is a better spot for Mississippi than it is for Iowa State, but I think Iowa State's the better team. So this is a, you know, a difficult call for me on the side. I would lean toward Mississippi based on I think this game means more to them, especially since they just got blown out in the last game. And if you look at Mississippi, I mean, they play Florida after this as well. So you could say that there could be a look-ahead spot to Florida. I think it's a tougher spot, though, for Iowa State because this isn't really, you know, a short travel spot either. And you're going there to play that early game on Saturday, non-conference. This would not be surprising if we see Iowa State look bad in this game and, you know, lose by 15 points. I think that's one of those possibilities that if it were a Big 12 game, you wouldn't think was a very high likelihood. In a game like this, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, and I think this is one of those situations where, you know, when you've got these challenge series between conferences, you know, I think for a first-year head coach like Kermit Davis, this game means a little bit more to him and a little bit more to the program. You know, for Steve Prohm at Iowa State, you know, a Sweet 16 run in his first year, they were a 5 seed in 2017. They'll probably be a 4 or 5 seed, something like that here this year. You know, they missed the tournament last year, but you know, that's a program that's already established. And I think Ole Miss is trying to get to that point here with Kermit Davis. So I think these showcase games, these cross-conference really resume boosters, for lack of a better term, I think this game means a lot more to Mississippi in that regard as well.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where this line is. You know, as I look at it right now, KenPom has Mississippi to lose by one. Bart Torvik has Mississippi minus 0.6. Probably almost on pick'em for this game. You know, certainly if I had to take a side, I would lean toward Mississippi. I'm not saying that this is going to be one of my stronger looks for Saturday. I would also look toward the over here. Mississippi's been efficient on offense this year, 29th in offensive efficiency, according to KenPom. Iowa State 15th. So you have two good offenses here. Iowa State likes to play up-tempo. Mississippi's slightly faster than the average team. So, you know, certainly my lean here would be the over as well.
All right, so we move on from that game here. Conference USA, we've had a lot of spots in Conference USA that we've been talking about here this week. I know you talked about them a lot in your situational article as well. Old Dominion and UTSA, what's going on with this game?
I really don't know what Conference USA was doing with this schedule. I mean, it makes no sense to me. They condense everything in a big way here. Old Dominion playing their fifth game since January 17th. Now, if you look at how they've done in those games, and let's take it back one game farther than that. The game before that, they won at FIU 75-74. I believe they had a buzzer beater to win that game. Then on the 17th, they beat Louisiana Tech 64-63, another one-point win. They went at home against Southern Miss 78-60. They go on the road, play a really bad first half against Charlotte, and come out of the break really hot, win 76-70. They go to UTEP, which is at a higher elevation, on Thursday night, play UTEP to a 50-48 win. It was tied 48-48 with a minute left in that game. They ended up winning by 2 points. UTEP is not nearly as good as UTSA. And this being the end of a road trip and fifth game since January 17th, this is a really, really bad spot for Old Dominion, about as bad a spot as you could ever find. Like I said, I think UTSA, an improving team. UTSA's played one game this week so far, and that was their 88-43 win over Charlotte. So obviously that game, didn't get as much, the guys were able to rest more. There wasn't as much of a push there as what there would have been in a close game. So I think UTSA comes into this game pretty fresh. Old Dominion, not fresh at all. I will say last year when they played, Old Dominion beat UTSA 100-62 at Old Dominion last year. I would think that UTSA, looking for revenge in a game like this, I think this game will be pretty close to pick 'em as well. It'll be interesting to see, how much the odds makers put into this spot, because UTSA has to be power rated lower than Old Dominion. But the situation that you're in, fifth game in that many days, and then it's the third straight road game playing after elevation. As we talked about before in Conference USA, Old Dominion is not very close to UTEP and UTSA. This is a long trip. So UTSA is a game that I will certainly consider here on Saturday. Very curious to see what this line comes out at.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know. And also you got to keep in mind, too, with UTSA's most recent performance, how much is that factored into the line? Does that create a little bit of price inflation? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but it should be an interesting game nonetheless. Let's go down to the Sun Belt here. Texas State, Georgia Southern, a lot of angles to consider for this game.
Yeah, Texas State has been getting beat by Georgia State pretty consistently, and it's one of those teams that, Georgia State's the team that everybody's gunning for. We talked about this when we talked about this conference, that, Georgia State's been the big dog for a while now. Texas State now leads this conference after beating Georgia State on the road 81-68. The big surprise about that is Texas State did it with three-point shooting. They made 13 three-pointers. Pearson made 7 three-pointers by himself, 1.25 points per possession. They led by 20 points with 2 minutes left, so this game was not close in the second half. Texas State off a really, really impressive performance. They're 17-3 so far this year. They've been very good. Here's the thing that interests me about this game, though. Texas State strength of schedule, according to KenPom, 280th. Georgia Southern strength of schedule, 75th. So, Adam, you know what's going to happen with this line. It's going to move toward Georgia Southern. So whatever this comes out at, say Georgia Southern opens a one-point favorite or it opens a pick-em, it's probably going to finish, 2 points higher than that toward Georgia Southern, because these are consistently getting bet on as far as their strength of schedule discrepancy games. And I have to say, I would like Georgia Southern in this game. Another game that I'll consider as a premium based on, how good of a value I think the price is. But to me, Georgia Southern's a good team. They're coming off a home loss to UT Arlington. UT Arlington was a team that we just talked about a week or two ago as far as a good buy-low team. They won 5 straight games now after a really bad start. They played a really tough schedule. Young team. They're playing much better now. Texas State coming off that huge win over Georgia State on the road. Now they have to play another game not very close to home here at Georgia Southern. And Georgia Southern's coming off that loss. So I think there's a lot, very fascinating handicap here, and I certainly lean toward the home team.
Well, we did talk about the Sun Belt on last Thursday's recording for the Friday show. After Georgia State games, in the next game, the team 35-52 ATS in the last 87 games. So that's the spot here for Texas State in this one. So get everything kind of coming together here on this edition of Bang the Book Radio. One more game to talk about here. This one from a major conference, a major game here to say the least. Another big test for Sparty on the road at Purdue. Maybe struggled a little bit at the end of the first half against Iowa. Very dominant second half for Tom Izzo's team. How do you see Sunday's game playing out between Michigan State and Purdue?
Well, Michigan State has proven themselves to be the top dog in the Big Ten at this point. I mean, they're on a really nice winning streak. Their only loss since the first game of the year was a loss at Louisville in overtime. And Louisville is better than everybody thought they were going to be. Chris Mack doing a really good job there. So that's not really a bad loss. They have some nice road wins. Does Michigan State in spots where they were down in the second half and they come back and win? They won at Florida. They won at Ohio State. They won at Iowa. They won at Nebraska, which is certainly a really nice win. Purdue's a better team than they look like they were. And we talked about Purdue a few episodes ago as well, as far as a team that was, probably a little bit underrated. And they have been a good buy-low team. And I have to say, I sound like I'm tooting my own horn here a lot. It almost makes me uncomfortable. But at the same time, it's good that we're giving out some good information. Hopefully somebody's made some money on it. That's always my goal, and I know Adam's goal as well, is to help people make some money and help them become more educated when it comes to betting on college basketball or whatever sport it is that we're talking about. To me, Purdue, they would be my slight lean in this game. However, I have to say, I think Michigan State's the better team. It's not an ideal spot for Michigan State. They've been playing on the road here a lot of late. They did expend a decent amount of energy in the second half in that game against Iowa. They're quite a bit better than Iowa. They're not nearly as much better than Purdue. Purdue is a team that is so efficient on offense, almost as efficient as Michigan State. And as we talked about a few episodes ago, their defense is better than they looked earlier this season. A few weeks ago, they were like 75th in defensive efficiency. Now they're up to 58th. Michigan State's going to get their points in this. I really think the big key is on the glass here. Can Purdue hold their end? Michigan State can really dominate on the offensive glass. They're getting back almost 40% of their shots in the Big Ten so far this year. If Purdue can limit their second shot opportunities, Purdue certainly has a shot in this game. I think that this is one of those games that could really springboard things for Purdue if they play well in this game, because Purdue was a little bit off the radar for a while when they were sitting at 9-6. People concerned about them. What's wrong with Purdue? Here's a chance for them to get that really marquee win. I know that they won at Wisconsin, which was certainly a big win. And then they won at Ohio State, but Ohio State's not really that good. This would be a really big win, and obviously there's going to be a lot of eyes on this game as well.
Yeah, and something that's interesting for me about this game is the total. Because we talked about Michigan State, we talked about how high their tempo was in the non-conference. They've played one game in Big Ten play at 70 possessions. They've had three games at 69, nothing higher than 70. And Purdue is a team that's kind of slowed down the tempo a little bit too. Their last three games, 67, 64, 67 possessions, and the Wisconsin game played at 73, went to overtime. So maybe some value on the under here for this game a little bit. Then again, you've got a Michigan State team very efficient on offense, Purdue very efficient on offense. So even if we play with a lower number of possessions here, still could find a way to go over the total. But I have noticed that I did have the under as a video pick in the January 8th game between Michigan State and Purdue, that, Sparty totals have been a little bit too high here of late.
Yeah, I would lean toward the under in this game as well. And if you look at that first meeting, the tempo was 64 possessions, which is, if this one's 64 possessions, the under is going to have a lot of value because, we're going to have a total in the high 140s, probably, 146, 147 would be my best guess for where their line will be. I think that this is one where it wouldn't surprise me if the market bets the total down. I usually talk about And it usually does happen that the over gets bet more often than not. So if you want to play the under, you wait till later. I think that might be the opposite in this game, because I think that most people will see the fact that these two teams are playing a little bit slower. They're both pretty good at defense. Obviously, both of these offenses are very efficient. So there's a chance that this one could be a really high-scoring game, and it wouldn't be too shocking. But I have to agree that I would lean toward the under here. And I will say that Purdue has a pretty quick revenge spot here from losing by 18 points there to Michigan State on January 8th. That game was really a little bit closer than that final score looked. I believe Michigan State was up by about 8 or 9 points with, 9 minutes left or something like that. Purdue didn't score for a really long time at the end of that game. So I think that game was closer than the final score would indicate.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper at huntersportspicks.com and also daily contributor to bangthebook.com. What's going on over at your website right now, man?
Check out huntersportspicks.com. Lowered prices on college basketball subscriptions. I'm still doing the special here for Bang the Book listeners. If you're interested in college basketball the rest of the year, $425 now for the rest of the year. You can message me at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter, Kyle at huntersportspicks.com. Also sign up for that free picks newsletter. I'll be sending free picks throughout the rest of the season. I'll also be doing some contests to win some cash prizes, free premium plays, things like that. So look for that. And also look for my work at bangthebook.com and check out the videos that I'm starting to do there. We've had the Sharp Money video here on Wednesdays. And then on Friday, so later today, I'm going to be recording one that looks at some of the key games for Saturday on the slate for college basketball. I like to try to break down some of the games. And there are so many games on Saturday, it's nice to be able to isolate a few that there could be some value on, or there's an interesting situation on. So we'll be doing that. And then certainly check out the daily article there. The plays have done very well so far this year. I know I had a lot of positive feedback about those. We'll keep grinding and see how we can do going forward on that. And I appreciate everybody reading that as well.
Well, of course, next week we'll also talk with Kyle about the Super Bowl and get some prop stuff in along with our usual college basketball content. Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com, and also daily contributor to bangthebook.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Time as always, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Talk to you then. Thanks.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Joe Everett of Draft Scouts and Insider Football, talk about what he saw at the Senior Bowl, and then also look at Super Bowl 53, some props, some matchup angles, stuff like that. And then we'll chat with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com on the Super Bowl. We'll talk probably side and total on Monday. We'll save the props for Friday. And then we'll also do the Summit League in college hoops and some look-ahead games for the week. So that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Monday.